You can talk. We can hear you.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, this is Al Williams, president of the San Francisco African American Historical and Cultural Society. Glad to be here again with you all to talk a little bit about the San Francisco Slavery Disclosure Ordinance. It was passed last November by the city and had a provision in it that required that 9 months after it was passed, a report had to be made back to the Board of Supervisors. That report was submitted last month, and the ordinance itself basically requires certain businesses to disclose whether they had any connection with slavery.
So we have Leslie on the line right now. Right, Leslie?
Yes.
Okay.
How are you?
All right.
Good.
How you doing? This is
Ronisha.
Hi. Hi. Hi, how are you doing? This is Rima.
Hello.
And I'm Al Williams. How you doing, Leslie?
Hi, nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you.
Well, first, we want to say thank you for all the great information that you gave us. You greatly informed me as a student. It was a lot of information that I was very unaware of, and I was very inspired by the film. We have, I think we sat down and watched it and came up with a lot of key points on the film. I think the first question I want to ask you is, you know how a lot of the minorities in the United States were treated very badly. I know the Asians were put into concentration camps, and, you know, the Indians were robbed of their land. But I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, those other minorities have had their reparations, but we were the only people, us being African Americans, haven't received our reparations yet. Is that true?
Yeah, it's very true. And let's not forget the Jewish community, who also received reparations as well. And not through the United States, but the United States pushed Germany to provide them reparations for the Holocaust. So, yes, we are, for some reason, in this country, not being given the apologies, the due respect and the acknowledgement of what has been done to us over 300-plus years in this country, and also not recognizing the after effects of what has been done to us. So, no, we continue to push. It's not like it's never been presented. There is woman who, her name is Callie House. There's a book called My Face is Black is True. Right after the emancipation, she was responsible for galvanizing African Americans to fight for reparations. So it's not like this is just a one-time questioning or asking of. This has been going on for centuries, for a couple centuries of us asking for reparations for what was done to us.
Yeah, how did you actually, like, get started working on the film? Like, how were you able to collect all of the information and everything for the documentary?
Well, what's interesting is I'm a firm believer in things happen for a reason. And if you knock on a door and it opens, it was meant to open. The film was actually put together in the last class I had at NYU's film program. It was in the master class. And during that time, I was really trying to come up with something that just wasn't going to be like, let's say, a master's thesis, but something that had impact, that was very close and true to my spirit. And at the same time, there were just people who were coming into my life who basically were there as the individuals to push me forward in the direction that obviously the film took, and that was a woman named Donna Lamb, who, believe it or not, I never knew this existed, Caucasians United for Reparations, a group called CURE, who's been very vocal and very active in acknowledging that Caucasians had, obviously, they have a responsibility to our community based on what has happened historically. And then I met Deidre Farmer-Pellman, based on information from Donna Lamb. And then the last part of it was, which was such luck for me, is that the Slavery Era Ordinance hearing in New York City was going on at the same time as my class. So it all came together one after the other, And that's how the film came to life.
Oh, yeah. And the next question I sort of wanted to ask was, I was kind of upset that when they showed footage of the conference in New York, that the lady that they had to represent the mayor's office, she seemed sort of like a nobody, sort of like a nobody. So that kind of made me upset. It was sort of, what did you say it was like, Amy?
It was like when a bill collector comes to your house and your parents don't want to be bothered, so they send their children to answer the door.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. And believe me, you were not the only one. And actually, that's very astute of you to recognize kind of the difference in the power structure there. It was certainly very unfortunate that that occurred. And the Congress, not the Congress, but the council members, obviously recognized it as well, because she was so ill prepared that, you know, basically they had no choice but to really put her in a place that she needed to be put in.
She did. So
you're very astute in recognizing that.
This is Rima speaking. During the movie, me and Ranisha and I, we came up with the point of where they had the insurance on the slaves.
Yes, uh-huh.
And we were watching the movie, and they were saying that the slaves were being put in places where a lot of dangerous
work was
being done, like the railroad and the coal mines.
Yes.
And et cetera.
Yes.
And being excuse me. And we were wondering, like, why would they do something like that?
Where do I begin? First and foremost, to enslave a person, and this was something that really, let me go back. During the Declaration of Independence, believe it or not, the discussions that Ben Franklin and Jefferson had, as well as the other supposed founding fathers had, a lot of the discussion was, how do we create the Declaration of Independence when we are not acknowledging that we have enslaved human beings? Mm-hmm. And basically, it ended with, well, we can basically not address that because the people we've enslaved are animals. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, and they, you know, do not function as human beings. So it was basically trying to substantiate why, for their guilt or whatever else they were trying to do, why that substantiated for them why they felt that, you know, we were lower than and therefore could be enslaved. Well, if you consider someone lower than human, then you're not going to treat them the way human beings should be treated. And so if that's the mindset you have, then you're expendable. Then you're an animal. You're to be worked to death because your life means basically nothing.
Okay.
And so as a result of this mentality that was perpetuated and permeated European society, they then did the things that they did to us. And it wasn't only putting us in hazardous conditions, but it was whipping us, castrating our men, separating us from our families, raping children and women and men, and doing things that you could not consciously, if indeed you were yourself human, inflict on another human being.
Yeah. I wanted to elaborate more on what you said about that. One of the key things that stood out to me in the film was when the guy made the point about, if you can't see the connections of how, you know, slavery relates to us today, then you have to be ignorant, because what we thought was sort of how, like, they saw the African-American male as more of a threat, and they saw the African-American female, we thought of more as an asset, how they were raping her, and, you know, so it was kind of like the African-American male wasn't able to take charge of his family, so kind of now, like, African-American males are very absent in their family, and it's kind of like they're always chasing after that pride or wants to show someone how masculine they are. So I thought that was kind of very interesting for me.
Yeah, if you inflict such harsh treatment on a group of people, and we're not talking over a decade, we're talking over centuries, it's going to have a lasting impact. And see, this is what this country refuses to acknowledge. We were, you know, first of all, to not know and be able to go back into your history and figure out from whence you've come, you know, that doesn't empower you. That does the opposite. To promise you land or to take away your land, because, you know, there were many thriving black communities, such as they called it Black Wall Street in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You know, you had places in Florida. You had thriving black communities that were doing well after slavery ended, and we relied on each other. So we basically were building each other in terms of our wealth and our communities. And what happened is you had these white communities who were jealous, who were poor, who did not want to see us thrive and wanted to keep us below them. And as a result, you know, for example, in Tulsa, which seems to be a constant theme in this country, is that a black man apparently raped a white woman, which was a lie. And so, as a result, the white community came in and just burned and killed thousands of African Americans. And this is not just one example. This has happened around the country in our history. So all to say, there are things that have consistently happened to us that have resulted in taking away land, riches, families. And if you look today at our communities, we're very fragmented. We're very broken. And, you know, so to me, there has been, and not just broken financially and economically, but I also believe mentally.
Yeah.
You know, in our communities, I feel need some major mental health work.
They do.
We really do, and we don't acknowledge that. But there's been so much. And let me just give you one example. I don't know if you've heard of post-traumatic slave disorder. That's a theory that was put together by Dr. Joy DeGry Leary. And I recommend people who have not heard about this get some information about her, and she has books and so on. But the bottom line, one thing that hit me very hard when I was listening to a speech she had given is, just imagine having to tell your little girl or your son, and don't even think about how her partner, her male partner, may have felt about this, but telling them that when they reach a certain age, in order to make sure that they're not sold off or killed, they had to allow Massa, white slave owner, to come in and have his way with her or him. Imagine having to do that. And imagine what that means to a father who had no rights, who could not in any way prevent that happening unless they ran away, or he stood up there and prevented it and got himself whipped or worse. And this is something, just a small, small part of what we're talking about in terms of slave, you know, just slave life. But a lot of that kind of behavior has carried through.
Yeah.
It really has carried through, and including, you know, trying to minimize, there's another example she gave of mothers who would try to minimize the intelligence of their sons, because they really wanted to make sure that they were not sold away. So what do? Oh, Johnny's really stupid. He's, you know, he can't do anything. I mean, so a lot of this has been passed from generation to generation, which basically was just for the point of survival. But it's never been addressed in our communities as this is what happened, and how are you behaving now to your sons and to your daughters?
So, Leslie, this is Roland.
Yes.
Couple of things. Out here in San Francisco, we kind of had this grassroots response in regards to reparations, and Al was part of the group and was wondering if Al would like to elaborate on the process that we went through in actually getting an ordinance passed where I see that New York and some of the other places couldn't.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Roland. I'd like to, before I jump into that, Leslie, I'd like to pick up on the theme you were just addressing, too, just for a moment, because I think that I certainly agree absolutely with everything you said about the historical fact. I heard Renisha and Rima were standing outside just before the show started. They were talking about the impact of all these things on us, but they were also talking about the strength that black people have demonstrated over time, yeah, notwithstanding all of these negative things, how we have sustained and survived. So I think it's important to put that piece in the context too, that yeah, it's been real tough over the, you know, and that's understating it. But by the same token, we've shown a strength and perseverance of character that is, I don't think has been shown anyplace else on the face of the earth, given all that we've had to go through. So I think we need to also, I need to also acknowledge that in us and encourage us to have to keep on keeping on and keep struggling, keep dealing with these things. But and then with that, I'd like to really thank you for your film, because your film was very, very helpful to us here in San Francisco. When we got started with this notion of a slavery disclosure ordinance here, we struggled a bit with how to convey to people who were not informed on the subject the pros and cons of the subject, because there are different views on reparations, there are different views on all these issues. But your film was very, very helpful in helping people to understand that conversation, seeing that what happened in New York made our lives and our job of convincing people that a slavery disclosure ordinance was appropriate was very, very instrumental in that. We went through a process of having to work with members of the Board of Supervisors here. Our effort grew out of NCOBRAs, the National Coalition for Blacks in America for Reparations, had been struggling for years to try to get a reparations bill passed following on John Conyers' H.R. 40 kind of efforts, unsuccessfully. So we began to focus on trying to get the slavery ordinance, and we worked with a supervisor here, a local supervisor, and got her on board, two supervisors. Ross Mercurimi was very strong on that, as well as Sophie Maxwell. And they introduced legislation, and we worked with a coalition of people, a broad-based coalition, to get that ordinance passed. Now, we know that the ordinance has been passed, a report has been turned in on it after 9 months, and there's very little information, very little new that's been brought forward. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on, now that the ordinance is passed here and given what you've seen in other places, any thoughts about that next stage, that next phase of moving it forward beyond just having legislation on the books to actually producing some tangible results?
Well, I think what's most important is to have people in place who are going to hold these companies accountable and who are really committed and dedicated to making sure that these companies follow the ordinance procedure, which apparently, from what I understand, didn't always happen in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was probably due to, there was, just not everyone being on board with the ordinance and, letting those people slip by or those corporations slip by. So I think that's one area. The other is even separate from these corporations is perhaps having someone who can do some research outside of, let's say, the government end, where if you have a corporation that has to abide by the ordinance, and let's say they come up with information that says they were not complicit or had any profits as a result of that, there needs to be perhaps an independent arm that has already done the homework to say, oh no, you need to look again, and because this is the information we have. And I'm not sure in what form that might be as an independent entity, but there certainly needs to be that check and balance. And I don't know how that would come about.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play a clip where Deidre explains the movement.
Okay.
Corporations played a variety of roles in the enslavement of Africans. For example, Aetna Incorporated wrote life insurance policies on the lives of slaves, with slave owners as the beneficiaries. What this essentially did was finance the enslavement of Africans. Someone who might not have invested in very expensive human chattel had the security from Aetna. In addition to that, with these domestic life insurance policies, enslaved Africans were able to be employed in ultra-hazardous capacities, in rice plantations, on railroads, on steamships, places where, or coal mines, where there were lots of deaths and very, very tragic deaths. So a company like Aetna owes restitution under the law of equity for helping to maintain Africans in these kinds of capacities through financing their enslavement. The law of equity basically says that if a party is unjustly enriched, that regardless of whether or not the matter was legal, from a moral standpoint, they could still owe restitution.
Well, I think that that's interesting. You play that clip specifically where she talks about various corporations, including Aetna. I don't know if you know, but currently there's a boycott against Aetna because they're one of the companies in her lawsuit against corporations, as you know, that was filed out of Chicago. And basically her group, which is the Restitution Study Group, joined up with another organization called Blacks in Government to boycott Aetna and ask them for a trust fund that would help the black community. To date, I think it's tomorrow, Blacks in Government have an opportunity to change their insurance policy away from Aetna to another policy, and I just want to say that hopefully this catches people's attention. But Aetna certainly is feeling the pain because through this boycott, because they have on their website, interestingly enough, information that speaks to perhaps why they're being boycotted. But, you know, obviously the things they're doing to help the black community and so on. But if people want to get involved, one of the things they can do is they can look at information, and towards the end I'll give the URL for Deidre's group, but can look at various corporations that have come forward, and other corporations that she has filed suit against in which she's done her research, and can make decisions on whether or not these are organizations or corporations that you want to continue to service. You know, I have one friend who moved her bank account from Wachovia to WAMU. You know, Wachovia was one of the corporations, banking institutions, that was complicit in the slave trade. So these are things that we perhaps can do to get the word across, make these companies nervous, because we tend to be, as you know, high-level consumers. I mean, we consume probably the most in terms of retail and so on in this country. So,
This is Ebony, and I want to address, like, the corporations. In the film, I know that some corporations were afraid to step forward about telling the truth and lying, and how the congressmen were, like, basically saying, it's better to tell the truth now than for us to find out on our own. And I want to know some of the reasons why the corporations are failing to tell the truth, and why aren't they so willing to just come out and say it, knowing we're not, like, trying to attack them and not trying to beat them down for using us as they did, but just wanting to recognize them and let the world know that we did help start these businesses and we should be appreciated. Why aren't they willing to accept us as who we are now and come forward and say that they did use us?
Well, that's a very good question. I know initially in this journey I asked the same question. And what was said to me, which, you know, makes a lot of sense, is, you know, as a community, and sometimes we don't want to call ourselves a community, but we are very powerful. We underestimate ourselves sometimes in terms of our buying power. And these companies, they know. I mean, they know before we even know that if they were to talk about their profits gained in and how they gained them in a very ugly part of history in this country, I mean, that's an ugly part of history. To admit that is which is why we still haven't gotten our 40 acres and a mule, is because it's so ugly. There is a lot of guilt around it, and I'm saying guilt among Caucasians. There's a lot of guilt, and these are things we don't know. And if they were to come out and say this, one, there could be such a force that hits them on the economic, which is always the bottom line. I mean, slavery also is about economics, and this country is built on capitalism and economics. They could very well see, and this is one reason why Aetna has done what it's done to try to combat the boycott. They're scared. They know that there's a potential for us, because we are a force to reckon with. There's a potential for them to lose a lot of money.
So, Leslie, we got a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I kind of wanted to throw out there, our young ladies are being very gracious. And, well, I'm speaking for myself, but doesn't this piss you off? I mean, how does this make you feel?
It makes me upset.
So in closing, you know, in the next couple of minutes, I mean, you guys are women. We're looking at it that I know the consciousness is supposedly that we were livestock. And so anytime you've been around a farmer or whatever, you know, they treat their animals a certain way. But then again, they wrote the book Animal Farm. But as young women watching this movie and talking to the producer, director, writer, on and on, who's another black woman, what did this do to you? How do you feel? And especially the way brothers are interacting and the way you guys are, your images are conveyed.
Well, this is Ranisha speaking. The movie to me had a lot of information that I did not know of. So it was very informative to me. And at the same time, I've always been, you know, interested in, like, our history as African Americans, and like a lot of things that were brought up in the movie seem to make so much sense to me now. It makes so much sense, like how slavery back then relates to us as people now. And it makes me upset, because a lot of people sit and they say, okay, even a lot of African Americans I know, they sit and they say how slavery doesn't affect us today, and that was so many years ago, and that's not true. So that's just one thing that just pisses me off.
And this is Ebony. I agree with Ranisha saying. And I was watching the film. It was like all this new information. It was like, well, it does apply now. And this is new information. It's like, we built all of this. This is like, basically, we own all this. And it's like Caucasians, they just feel like they're so overpowered us, and they're just so much better than us. And it's hard to, like, try to battle them, knowing that we did help them do this. And now it's like, I think it would be easier for us to address them on a more their level, and knowing, like, okay, yeah, we know what you guys are hiding, and we know that this is ours, and we're going to battle you, and we're going to make sure you recognize that we do know that we do own part of this, and it's not even like a battle anymore. It's just like we're trying to get recognized now. We don't even want to fight anymore. The war against black and whites, it's like now we just want it to be peace and just at least for them to recognize who we are as people and as women.
We
like
are black.
Yeah, we know. We're not ignorant. We're educated. We know what's going on now. You used us, but now we don't even want to use you. We just want to work with you maybe and just like get something better out of this for both of us. Maybe we both can get some money out of this.
Well, can I ask you, first let me just say I truly appreciate you all having me on. And, you know, I feel like I truly have accomplished something, especially when you say that you've learned some new things. And you sound like both incredibly talented and intelligent young women. So I truly appreciate your recognizing that. My question is, how do you think this film can be used among your age group as an educational tool? How can I use this to educate other young people so that they can become empowered?
I would say, first off, letting them, because I was going to bring this to school with me, because I think like just getting it out there and letting kids know that they're not nobodies, they're not the bottom of the barrel, and that they can be empowered and they are powerful. And I think just getting the message of just believing in yourself and just like, because people, like you were saying, I heard you say that the people were afraid for their kids to get taken away, so they would say, oh no, he's dumb, or she can't do this, she can't do that. I think just the encouragement and the like someone being there to tell the kids, like, you can do this, you are powerful, and here are the resources, now you apply this and go out and do something with it. I think it's just the way it comes to them as far as, okay, here goes this film, and I want you to watch this and really recognize these were your people, these are your roots, and now you can change it, and you can be the proper source to control all of this.
Sounds good.
Well, I think a lot of us as, you know, African-Americans, I feel like a lot of people my age, they just don't recognize the fact that we are strong people. And I think the film basically shows that we have overcome a lot.
And so Leslie, can you give us a last statement? We're getting ready to sign off. We're going to play that my favorite clip from the movie. But can you give us your closing statement?
Sure. I struggle with really trying to figure out how to use this film. And, I just encourage young people to have that curiosity, to, you know, really not take for face value what's in the history books, and to really understand, which, you know, I'm just going to put it just basic. You know, if you're the oppressor and you've got folks out there who are making you wealthy from sunup to sundown and doing all these things, you know, what does that say about you? You know, one of the things that Ben Franklin did say about slavery and why he didn't like slavery, believe it or not, was that it was making white folks lazy, that they were lazy because they were not the ones building this country. And that was out of Ben Franklin's mouth. That's the only reason why he did not like slavery. So that makes you think. Just makes you think. So those are my final words.
When you mention slavery, conjure up in your mind the worst kind of human cruelty, lynching, tarring us, separating you from your children. Psychologists say that the most traumatic experience one can have is uprootment from their family. Murder, rape, and robbery of a people, and the impact that that has had on us to this very day, psychologically, sociologically, economically. And some of people in New York say, forget about it. That was a long time ago. I didn't enslave you. We hear that one often too. I just came over here during the turn of the century. I'm Irish. I'm Polish. I had nothing to do with your enslavement. I don't care if you came over here last night. America enslaved us, and you are benefiting from the profits of slavery, and you must pay the debt.